Everyone, welcome to our Davenant Shorts, where we talk with the faculty, professors, staff, lecturers from Davenant Hall, more specifically towards their Trinity term in 2024, which spans from April 8th through June 15th. So we have about 12 courses, 12 professors that we're talking to about their courses, about what they do, about what they teach, their background. And for today, we have Mr. Joshua Shaw, who's still working on his PhD. So in a year or two, we'll call him Dr. Joshua Shaw. But we got Mr. Joshua Shaw on 1st and 2nd Corinthians. So thanks for coming on the show, Mr. Shaw.
Thanks, Peter, for having me. It's great to get to know you and to know your listeners and what you guys are interested in.
Yeah. So first question, although we talked for about 20 minutes before this, I got to know you a little bit more, but yeah. If you can provide the SparkNote version of Joshua Shaw to our audience and how you became a Davenant Hall lecturer.
Yeah, of course. So I think, as I was thinking of this, I think the shortest way to put it, because it's kind of the red thread, I think, through my life is that I feel like a pilgrim, as it were, and the end goal for me and sort of my vocational pilgrimage is to understand the New Testament and all of its parts, everything that includes. And it started, I think, when I was 1.5 or 2, when my parents, my parents taught me that that knowledge was more valuable than silver and wisdom than much fine gold. But more concretely, this just kind of general passion to learn and to understand God's word and to grow in wisdom. This began a little more concretely at Hillsdale 10, 12 years ago, where I was introduced to the whole Western classical tradition and started trying to narrow my focus. And the question became then, okay, I want to understand the New Testament and what kind of tools did were presumed from the Reformation all up to the 19th century. What tools did you need to have to do that? And I realized that the trifecta of Greek, Latin, Hebrew were on that list, as well as some modern languages. So I've kind of, I took it upon myself to get all language, both foreign and all learning, both foreign and domestic. George Herbert says, and I'm a firm believer in this, that the poet George Herbert says that nothing comes amiss in this world. That anything you can pull in is useful. And so for me, there's Greek, Latin, German, French, Italian, Old English, and all of those things. Professional study of Greek and Latin classics, as well as patristics, Plato, Homer, Virgil, Athanasius, Origen, Eusebius, Tertullian, Augustine, Shakespeare and Milton in the English language, because I think that's a heritage that's really important to cultivate as an English speaker. Teaching at all levels, from middle school all the way up to older folks at our Bible studies at church, and grad students and everything in the middle, and just ravenously reading everything I get my hands on. That's been my kind of vocational path in the last 10 or so years. And then in that process, I got to know Ad Fontes, the publication that Davenant puts out. Got to know some folks there. Eric Hutchinson and Professor Hillsdale was a mentor of mine. Knew all these guys. He was around Davenant when it got started. And so slowly I made connections. I was watching, listening, what's going on with Davenant. And then when I came back, it was time for health and family reasons to come back from Germany after 4 years there working on my PhD and early Christian studies in Greek and Latin, which was a tremendous privilege, and of course my German. I was a residential scholar there for a little while. Was thinking about doing a whole year or a couple years there, but we wanted to be near family, so we ended up coming over to Arkansas, where I'm helping a young classical Christian school get going with curriculum and teaching and all that. And so that's where I'm at, and they said, hey, you should still teach for us online, and so that's why I'm lecturing for Davenant.
There you go. Cool. So as a lot of our listeners know, and as I'm sure you're well aware of, there are a ton of theological schools, seminaries, institutions of whatever stripe, especially so the Reform stripe, and they're growing, or they're some are closing, whatever it may be. But what makes Davenant Hall in your view unique amidst how many seminaries and theological schools are out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. And now I'm actually really curious to hear what Alistair or Tim said.
You'll have to wait a few weeks.
Yeah, but But what I would say is that Davenant is not completely unique, right? But I think it's among relatively few seminaries that puts primary text and historical
that is what everybody's been saying. Yep.
In the centerpiece. It's a sickness that C.S. Lewis noted in the 1940s that has now become thoroughly endemic, that people want to, whether out of fear or false humility or misinformation or lack of value, they're hesitant to dive into primary sources. But I believe certainly, and I think at Davenant, we believe that this is just the thing that birthed a new era of understanding of God's two books in the Reformation, 15th century.
Yeah, hence Ad Fontes, what you just described.
Exactly, and that it's not an accidental thing, but it's essential, to use Aristotelian terminology. It belongs actually to the essence of following out, using the resources God's given us, using our eyes, using our ears, open them up and observing. I think we often pretend like we've got things down. We know what the New Testament says, but every generation, I think, is called to new diligence on that. And so I think you can say a couple of things really quickly on this, is that one, I think Christ has freed us from false fear and false hope. You know, so on the one hand, we don't have false hopes about what knowledge can bring in this. It doesn't automatically bring virtue. There are a lot of dangers along the way, but also false fear. It's not, we know what men can do to us in Christ's words. And so whether it's a pagan or a heretic, we don't have to walk into these texts and this history with fear. But like Paul, we can walk into Athens or Corinth, and we can both listen and preach without any fear of what we're going to hear or what we're going to encounter.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, in terms of the value, I love this quote from Thomas Traherne, that there's a value in making friends in all ages. And with Hebrews, we talked earlier in our conversation, the Epistle of Hebrews says that, you know, about Abel, since we talked a little bit of Greek, I'll just say apotanon etilale, that having died, he yet speaks. And I believe that this is generally true of ancient to great ancient texts and authors, that they still speak to us when we give our ear to them, we can learn. And so finally, I think there's a sacred obligation as well as a privilege in studying history. That is, it's to listen to the previous generation and generations. What did they say about God's works and wonders?
Yeah.
And then also to tell it to the coming generations. And so I think this is something that is obligatory for those that God's given the opportunity and the resources, as he has right now in 21st century America, to study what he's done in previous generations.
Yeah. Well, it seems like in your life, the red thread, which has been moving through, is the same one that has run through all the faculty members. Is all of them from Davenant have been saying, back to the primary sources, let's get back to the reformers of red and continue on their shoulders. Yeah. So it seems like that answer is what's shaping Davenant Hall. So on to what you're teaching, 1st and 2nd Corinthians. My guess is for most, I think a lot of the course names at Davenant are like kind of compelling. They're like moral theology and counseling, or sex and gender in modern theology. And they're like, well, 1st and 2nd Corinthians. Okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. But what, maybe describe what you're teaching, especially, you know, maybe this helps too, with a classicist background.
Yeah.
Or classical background, trying to understand the New Testament in its fullness.
Yeah, thanks. So and I can kind of retool that title just a tiny bit and say that slightly more accurate would be the Corinthian church. And so what we're going to look at, we're going to do a slow exegetical study of Corinthians, 1 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians, of course, we're going to read and reread alongside it, but we're going to slowly march through chapter after chapter 1 Corinthians. That's kind of the
not 3rd and 4th Corinthians that haven't been discovered yet.
No, not yet, unfortunately. No epistles to the Laodiceans or anything like that. But we'll slowly work through that. And I'll mention some of the other stuff we'll read alongside. But I think one of the things that's overlooked or emphasized too little is the history of the Corinthian church. And so we're going to work really hard on uncovering those who are of Paul, of Apollos, of Peter, and of Christ. Who are these opponents? Who are these nebulous figures in the background? What are the real problems? I think Corinthians comes across to people as this kind of disconnected tissue of all kinds of different topics. And it's not surprising that it's been chopped up into many different epistles by various critical scholars.
Sure.
But I think there is there is a red thread through First Corinthians, and that there are unifying elements, and we're going to work, I think, to understand those. And to do that, we'll read a lot of stuff. And this speaks to the other half of your question about my classical background and where that comes in. We're going to read, of course, we're going to read bits of the Pentateuch and other parts of the New Testament, Acts and everything, to give us that immediate context we need. So that goes without saying, but then, and the most important being Second Corinthians, of course. But then beyond that, we'll read Clement of Rome's letter to the Corinthians, and then the pseudo-epigraphic second epistle, because probably the first early Christian sermon outside of the New Testament, and it probably is written by a Corinthian. We'll read Pausanias's chapter on Corinth and his description of Greece. So this guy Pausanias wrote the first ever cultural guidebook, and he's describing Corinth, its history. What did Paul see when he walked into Corinth? Right. I think so that the purpose of that, we'll read that over a few weeks, the statues, the temple, the cultural history, what's that background of Corinth, and then quite a few other things alongside this, but those will be snippets. So we'll look at some inscriptions. You'll probably do the epistle to Diognetus at the very end. We'll have some things like that, but that's the main primary bits. The primary sources will be New Testament, Old Testament, but then Pausanias, and then Clement of Rome, and this pseudo-epigraphic epistle. We'll take some secondary scholarship, and one of my other passions we haven't talked about yet is helping people see where I think the Reformational education program started by Philip Melanchthon in 1517 in Tübingen. You know, he gave in the same year, people often point to the 95 Theses, right? But in the same year, Philip Melanchthon is holding an oration, a declamation in Tübingen, where he's talking about the need for reforming education as well as reforming theology in the church. And I think where that reached in some ways a bloom was the 18th and 19th and 20th century, early 20th, and then it started to die at the very beginning of the early 20th century. And we often look at that time as the downfall, and that's one narrative you can tell of the liberal Protestantism,
higher critical scholarship,
all this, but there's a lot of good men who fought the good fight at the university. So not just the old Princeton, but guys like those. Of course, Bavinck has been a hot topic lately, but other guys like D.A. Schlatter, Lightfoot, Friedrich Gaudet in France and Switzerland, Philip Schaff, who came from Switzerland, America, Theodor Zahn and Schlatter are two really great scholars in Germany. So we'll take some writings of those, one of which hasn't been translated before. I'm going to translate for the course, an introduction to the epistles, and we'll see what these guys have to say. And I think, you know, this is kind of getting toward the very end of it, is, you know, why teach this class? Like you said earlier, there's a lot of attractive titles at Davenant Hall, and I would encourage people to take those.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I think on first glance, it seems like the least attractive title on the catalog. But the more you talk, I'm sure people are hearing it's sounding like one of the more attractive titles in the catalog.
I hope so. I think there's, and I'll tell you what I hope that the students can take from it. I think they'll see a powerful letter that deserves to stand alongside Romans with an extraordinary message for today. Paul's theology, the Christian, and I'll just say one thing, that that the Corinthians, their mantra was panta existens, all things are lawful. And the most shocking thing about First Corinthians is that Paul does not say no, all things are not lawful.
Yep.
And they said all things are ours, and Paul did not say no, they're not. What Paul did was he said, yes, all things are yours, panta humon, Christou de humex, but you belong to Christ and Christ is God's. And he said later, yes, all things are lawful, but not all things edify. And so I think we can take these thoughts and we can see that First Corinthians has a really extraordinary message for the church today that's underappreciated, that also unites a lot of the varied issues that Paul's dealing with in First Corinthians. And I hope that people will come away with this with a lot of helpful resources, whether they're teachers or pastors or seminary students. But as a Christian also, that, you know, that I guess I couldn't say better than Paul's own prayer for the Philippians, that that they, I, my prayer is from myself and from the students in this class that we would, that our love would abound in every kind of knowledge and observation or perception. Why? So that we might approve what is excellent.
That's awesome. Well, you you answered my next two questions within this question. And so just to cap it off for those who are listening, if this course interests you, if what Mr. Shaw, Professor Shaw, for those of you who will take this course, if this interests you, we have a coupon code from Davenant Institute, Davenant Hall. It's GGG Trinity 24, and it gives first-time students, whether you're auditing or full-time students, $25 off your first course. So it's a little bit off the top. So it helps you out a little bit if you're like, man, if only I had $25 less that I had to pay, then this is your lucky day. You got the coupon code for Davenant Hall. Well, Mrs. Shaw, Joshua, thank you so much for coming on, for using your classical education, for understanding the whole, or trying to understand the whole of the New Testament and deposit both in our brains, but also enlarge our hearts. Thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Peter. It's a pleasure and a prayer as well that continue.
Of course.